You're the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 23. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Christina L. Martini. Christina is a partner with DLA Piper, a global law firm with lawyers in more than 40 countries. Tina is chair of the Chicago Intellectual Property Practice Group and serves as DLA Piper's national hiring partner, Associate Recruiting. She has received numerous professional accolades, including an AV preeminent rating by Martin Dell Hubble. In addition to Tina's full-time practice and various leadership roles at the firm, she is a thought leader, author, columnist, and speaker. Tina frequently shares her business and legal expertise on media outlets such as Bloomberg, Thomson Reuters, WGN Plus Radio, Chicago Lawyer Magazine, Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, Huffington Post, Fast Company, among others. We welcome Tina to the show.
Christina Martini, welcome to the show. I'm so thrilled to be able to join us here in Year of the Peer.
Well, thank you very much, Leo, for having me. I'm very excited to join you today.
Well, and I'm really thrilled that my cousin, Kathleen, who works at the World Economic Forum, was kind enough to introduce us. She had listened to a bunch of the podcasts and said, I have the perfect guest for you. And I said, well, that is so great. So I'm thrilled that, you know, we were able to kind of connect virtually and talk a little bit about our show, talk about what you're doing. And I think you bring just a wonderful perspective to the conversation here today. And with that, I'd love for you to just to talk about yourself just for a moment in terms of what you do and where you are and just share that with us.
I'm happy to do that. So I'm a partner at DLA Piper, which is a law firm, a global law firm, and I'm based in Chicago. And I am the chair of the Intellectual Property Practice Group here in Chicago. And I also wear another leadership hat as the national hiring partner for Associate Recruiting. In terms of my practice, it's really an intellectual property practice. It's non-patent and it's a global practice. And it's been a terrific privilege to be at this firm for 23 years. And I have a full-time practice, manage and lead a group of about 25, 30 legal professionals, and also work with a recruiting team nationally to drive our recruiting efforts with respect to law students who are looking for jobs out of law school, as well as lateral associates, meaning those relatively junior lawyers who may be at other firms who decide that they are interested in making a transition to DLA Piper. So that's just a thumbnail sketch of what I do. And I've had other leadership roles too, but that's what I'm up to right now.
Yeah. And I'd like to talk about both those things. For starters, of course, I'm always fascinated by how people found the careers that they're in. Because I'm figuring when you were in elementary school and someone asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? It wasn't necessarily the answer I wouldn't imagine was an intellectual properties attorney. So tell me a little bit about, how you found your career.
Well, it's a great story. So I come from a family of doctors, pharmacists, and engineers. And when I was a young girl, I thought I would be a pharmacist just like my parents. And as time evolved and I had a father who told me you may want to rethink that, I had three brothers who are also all engineers. And so I ended up going down the engineering route and had started my master's and was looking at a career at Motorola right out of college. And I happened to be taking a safety engineering class where I met a woman who came in and talked about accident reconstruction as her career path, having gone and been an industrial engineer like I was studying to be. And she talked about how much of her career ended up taking more of a legal path because a lot of accident reconstruction really focused on who was responsible for whatever the industrial accident was that had happened. And so that was my first real exposure to the law, and I found the way she described her job fascinating. And so that created an awareness for me of the law that I hadn't really had before. And I also had a boyfriend in college who was studying. He was a couple years ahead of me, was also an engineer who was thinking about pursuing a career in patent law. And so those two influences on me ended up opening my eyes to a possibility that, frankly, I'd never considered before. And so fast forward, I took the LSAT, did well enough to get into Northwestern Law School, and thought, you know, kind of like the Blues Brothers, it's a sign from God that maybe you're supposed to do this. That's sort of the path I decided to take. And here I am 25 years later, really enjoying the career path that I chose.
Isn't it amazing, though? I mean, think about it. There are two people that obviously had a huge influence in what has now been your life's work, that had you not met them, who knows what you would be doing right now and what path you may have chosen. I'm sure either whatever you chose, you would have been successful at it, but it's fascinating, isn't it, though?
It really is. And I love the serendipity that life brings. And I think it's one of those things that all of us experience, these different circumstances, and have these types of people cross our path. And I think it's really important for us all to be aware of these sorts of circumstances, because I do think that life has a way of showing you what the right path is. And I think it's also incumbent upon us, when folks enter our lives and serve such a higher purpose for us, ultimately, for us to do the same for others, and to understand that even if it's taking a half an hour to meet with somebody that someone tries to connect us with who's at a crossroads, to really try to embrace those opportunities as much as we can, because it's our obligation to pay it forward and to be that for other people as well.
And I'm always fascinated too that there are people who enter our life and sometimes they remain lifelong friends, and other times they are people we may spend an hour and a half with on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And yet they have a profound, you know, impact. There's something about that conversation or that influence, which is really remarkable. So in addition to the two people you mentioned, were there some others also who you feel played a pretty pivotal role in kind of shaping who you are, both as a person and as a professional?
Yes. I mean, there are a number of folks, and I'm happy to sort of start from the beginning. I would say that obviously my family was critically important. My parents and my three brothers were really, and I was the only girl of the four children. And so, you know, there's definitely a great dynamic with having three brothers who, I was a tomboy, but then they also protected me, but they also helped me fend for myself. And they also taught me I can be whatever I want to be, and that, you know, the sky's the limit. And so having a supportive family was really critical. I would say that a huge inflection point in my life was when my mother died during high school. Because even though I still had the support system from the rest of my family, I was forced to fend for myself and to support myself financially to get myself through school and whatnot. And so I started my professional career of working right as I graduated high school. And I'd say one of the first critically important people to me in terms of a professional career was when I worked my first job in retail, and my manager, who really helped me get out of my shell. I was very much an introvert and still remain an introvert, but a more managed introvert than I was before. But having to work retail and sell and be forced to take care of people and to be outgoing, I would say that that was a huge inflection point for me. Although I was making minimum wage and was a retail job, that to me was a very critical part of my development. And I'd say the jobs I had at Motorola during college were also critical. And the folks that were my bosses, Rich and Brian, were really important to my development, because one of them showed me what I didn't want and the other one showed me what I did want as a future. And although they were both in the same department, I think it was then that I realized that an engineering career would be great, but that it wouldn't necessarily be my life's work. And having one person say, keep your possibilities open, the other saying, put your nose down and, you know, make sure that you get the work done, that was a really important thing for me critically in terms of my development. And so it was at that point that I really made my mind up that I was going to go to law school. I was still, I would say that the jury was still out at that point for me. But having had that work experience, I think really made a difference. And so I had some work experiences during law school as well that I'm happy to get into if you'd like. But I would say that, you know, those two folks that I work for at Motorola, I don't think they really realized at the time how important they were in helping me make a decision about whether or not to go to law school.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, especially when we have people come up to us later in life and with no real perception of that or understanding of that at all. I've had people have said, you know, you made a huge difference for me. And I'm like, really? And you want to know what that was about. And it's very wonderful to hear. The retail story, though, reminds me of when I completely agree. I think working in retail and having that experience is really, really great. But I remember one time I was with another sales guy, and we were selling, you know, shirts and ties and all of that. And the people who were largely full time, that we were working summers, you know, were selling the expensive suits and all. And the kid next to me, when the salesman was taking a half a dozen suits and he'd thrown them over his shoulder and bringing it up to the register for this man, he said, "Man," and the salesman's name was Jack at the time. He said, "Boy, someday I'd love to be like Jack and be able to sell those six suits." And I looked at him and said, "I don't know about you. I want to find out what that guy does who bought the six suits." I said,
"Yeah."
I said, let's go there. I think what that does too is we meet a lot of different people who come from a lot of different walks of life, and we get exposed to, you know, just so much. And, you know, it's really, really helpful. But yeah, there's a guy, of course, Drew Dudley, who does a wonderful TED talk, and he talks about this lollipop leadership moments, right? It's like a 6-minute talk. It's been viewed by, you know, millions of people. But I think it's this idea that leadership is not like this big, grandiose thing. Sometimes what leadership is really about is just helping the person next to you, you know, making a difference in that one person's life that can be really profound. And so it sounds like, and I'm sure if the folks from Motorola are able to hear this podcast, we'll know who they are, I hope, in terms
yes.
of the difference they made in your life. And that's real exciting stuff, you know?
It is, yeah. And I'm actually still in contact with one of those two folks that I worked with. And it's interesting because he's gone on to investment banking. So he was in the middle of an MBA at the time that I met him, and he had gotten his industrial engineering degree from Purdue. And he said, "This is the path I've decided to take." And what's interesting is he ended up going on to get his MBA and is now in investment banking. So he took his career in a very different direction as well. And I think that that's one of the things that I've sort of tried to learn and continue to do along the way is to be outside my comfort zone as consistently as I can be, and to develop a comfort for being outside of my comfort zone as much as possible, because I think that's where a lot of the growth happens.
Oh, I don't think, yeah, there's no question about that. And I feel like I'm out of my comfort zone all the time, which is great. Enjoy it quite a bit. But, you know, I did want to mention, you know, a little while back, we had Pat Waters, who's the Chief Human Resources Officer for LinkedIn, show, and we talked about this idea of hiring and bringing on talent. And this idea, sometimes we've certainly run across people in our lives who, with all the promise that they're going to be successful in the organization, for whatever reason, they don't work out. And oftentimes it isn't them. They'll go on somewhere else and be very, very successful. But sometimes the fit, for whatever reason, just doesn't quite work out, either for the firm or the individual. And I guess, you know, in your role in the human resources end of things, who are the kind of people you believe are successful at your firm? You know, how do you go about finding these people and identifying them? And what does that start to look like for you?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right?
That's what Pat said, basically, too. You know, isn't that the, you know, the secret of it all? Sure.
Right. That's a great question. And I'd say that it's an answer that's evolved over time, just as my organization and any organization will evolve over time. It's one of those things where I've had extensive experience interviewing people now for the past 15 years. And I'd say there are a number of things that we look for. You know, sometimes it's one of those things where you know it when you see it. And it's a combination of somebody's academic and professional credentials, how they present themselves. I would say, obviously, those are really, that's like basic blocking and tackling when it comes to finding the right fit. We adopt a behavioral interviewing style, so we will often ask questions to get a sense as to who these folks are in the context of different situations, both academic situations as well as professional situations. And so if I were to sort of rattle off a list of sort of adjectives of folks that we're looking for, I'd say they have to be very smart, intellectually curious, and a fire in the belly. And when I say fire in the belly, I mean somebody who has this drive to succeed, to get to the right answer, to deliver that perfect work product to a client, to understand a client's business, have a really great client service orientation. We've noticed that folks who have work experience, particularly as consultants, folks who are in sales, even retail experience, it's all about serving a customer, serving a client, getting yourself in their heads, understanding what they need, how they make decisions, and then being able to tailor the advice, tailor your service offering to what their needs are. And so a lot of it is about figuring out, are these folks oriented this way? Because in a world of, you know, the legal profession, it's really pretty flat demand at this point. And it's all about gaining market share and differentiating yourself from other service providers. So being able to deliver top-notch client service, whatever that means from one client to the next, and being able to discern pretty quickly what that means, we need folks who are able to do that and who are oriented that way pretty early on. And they also obviously have to be collaborative. They have to be able to work in teams. They have to be able to manage themselves well, not just with peers and not just manage up, but they also have to manage to the side and down as well. And you'd be amazed at how in the course of like a 20-minute interview, if you ask the right questions and pay attention to what the answers are and what is said and what isn't said, you'd be amazed at how much you can learn about people in a relatively short period of time.
So what are some of your favorite interview questions that you like to ask?
Well, I ask some softball questions, and you'd be amazed at how often folks don't really give you the best answers and oftentimes end up pulling themselves out of the running pretty quickly. I like to ask people why they are interested in my firm. That will often be the first question that I'll ask. And oftentimes, I don't get very impressive answers. What I'm looking for is people who have prepared, who really understand why they're interviewing with my firm and what it is about their skill set that they think aligns well with our firm. I also like to ask folks about their prior work experience, but I ask very pointed questions with respect to that. I like to ask them what folks that they were working with whom they were working directly would say about them and what the most challenging and rewarding experiences have been for them and at what point they decided. Oftentimes people make a pretty significant transition into the law. And when that happens, I like to ask them why they made the decision to go to law school and what are the characteristics they have that they think align well with my firm as well as the profession.
You know, it's always interesting, and I think especially for younger people when they're going for that first and second job, is they think in terms of, all right, I'm going to apply to a whole bunch of these law firms, and if somebody can give me a job, that'll get me started, that will be great. And they don't always think about it in terms of the fact that this is a two-way street, you know, like
right. You
get to decide where you want to work and what that would be like for you, and why wouldn't you find out as much about every law firm as possible and at least develop some priorities and some values and things that are important to you about where you want to go and why, you know, as best you can kind of determine from the outside, which as we know is not always easy to do either. But yeah, it makes such a big difference as opposed to someone who, you know, you're interviewing who you just feel like they just want a job somewhere. You know?
Right. It's pretty easy to tell when you're interviewing people like that. Because when people go the extra mile, either to look up the attorneys who are currently working at the firm to see if there's any connections, either familial connections, connections through their network, alumni from the school they're going to, there's so many different ways to connect the dots. And when people actually take the time to help try to connect those dots, it makes a big difference.
And quite frankly, it's so much easier to get that information today than
Oh, yes.
If I were looking for a job 20 or 30 years ago, I mean, you'd really have to do some detective work to figure out and get answers to what a lot of the questions you're talking about today. It is so readily available through whether it's LinkedIn profiles, whether, I mean, any number of sources online that are just rich with anything you'd ever want to know. Glassdoor, I mean, there's all kinds of resources out there for people that there's just kind of no excuse in many respects not to be pretty schooled on where you're interviewing, right?
I completely agree with you. When I look at when I was interviewing during law school in the early 90s, there was no internet. You really had to rely on information that students who were at the school provided back to the career services department, handwritten notes about their experience working at a particular firm during the summer, as well as getting hard copies of recruiting brochures. I mean, that's really what we were limited to back in the early 90s and before that. And it's amazing the wealth of information that's available. And I completely agree with you. Now there's really no excuse to not be completely prepared for an interview.
You know, to have to wait for things to arrive in the mail used to be just
right.
Really, it's unthinkable now, you know, in so many ways. So what are some of the favorite questions then that interviewees have asked you?
Well, they've asked me questions like, what are the characteristics that I think are necessary for someone to succeed at the firm?
Very cool.
And they've also asked, for me to take a look back at the folks that I started with at the firm, how many of them are still with me at the firm? And if I had to sort of, give them a thumbnail sketch as to different reasons why people have left, what would those be? And if I, I've had folks ask me if I decided that I didn't want to pursue a career in law, what would the other alternatives that I would have been considering, what would they have been? They've asked about my thoughts on the leadership of the firm, if I had ever thought that the firm would evolve the way that it has. I mean, these are some thought-provoking questions that I think have been uniquely tailored to someone like me who's been at the firm for a long enough period of time that I've watched the firm evolve in very interesting and innovative ways, that if you haven't been in the same firm for as long as I have, you wouldn't necessarily be in a position to answer.
Part of what we're really dedicating this whole year to is this idea of who you surround yourself with matters. And obviously, mm-hmm. when you're in a workplace and you have people who have shared sensibilities about their work ethic and curiosity and all these things you talk about, that's really, really important. And then, of course, when I talked with Pat Waters and others as well, they also want to make sure that while they're hiring people with these shared sensibilities, they want someone who isn't just a me too, in that they bring some added value in some way. And often it may be from however you want to define diversity, for example, or some perspective or some expertise or something that they add to the team.
Right.
That is really, really helpful. So how do you kind of look at this idea of, on one hand, we want a lot of these shared characteristics that we know are crucial to being really successful in this law firm. And at the same time, we don't want a lot of Me Toos around here. We want
right.
diversity. So how do you go about achieving that? Because I know you've done a lot of work in that space.
Yeah. So a lot of it is taking a look at how you are able to even meet these folks in the first place. So we really try to make an effort to make sure that the universe of folks that we have the privilege of considering are diverse from the very beginning. So it's making sure that you are collaborating with schools and other different sources of candidates that enable you to have a universe of people that are pretty diverse from the beginning. It's also making sure that you are very careful and strategic about how you frame the job qualifications, and making sure that you take a step back, look at the qualities and characteristics of the people that have been successful and have a track record of success, but also looking at it three-dimensionally and understanding that sometimes you can achieve these qualities and characteristics in ways that are not traditional. For example, you don't necessarily have to be a consultant or have been a poli-sci major in order to have a client service orientation and to know what it's like to be a lawyer. there are other skills, there are other degrees, there are other jobs that people can have that maybe on a surface level do not necessarily directly correlate or align with the career in the law, but you gain the skills that are necessary to be successful nevertheless through those types of experiences. So it's really being open-minded about how you can achieve certain types of skills and making sure that you really sort of stick with what you believe is going to work. Because I think if anybody is a tweener, so to speak, if you think someone has some good qualities, but you're also concerned during the interviewing process about somebody's ability to ultimately succeed, you have to really listen to your gut. And I would say that that's another thing that I've found is really important, is especially when you've had the experience of interviewing a number of people, leading a number of people over the years, and you've seen what succeeded and what hasn't been as successful, you have to really listen to your gut as well.
It seems like a lot of your model, though, really creates a lot of opportunity for discovery, right? For people who walk in the door that you didn't expect. Right. And no, actually, now you, instead of having a strict box that if they don't fit in that box, they can't play. All of a sudden now you've got a framework that's flexible enough that allows for you to say, wow, we never even knew this type of person existed, or we didn't know, you know, any number of things that you kind of discover during this process. And it seems like at least you have the option to find a place for this person to be successful in your organization and add value. Is that fair kind of way to think about it?
Yes, I think it is fair. And I think that it's when I sort of look at myself as sort of like my first, you know, my first frame of reference, an industrial engineer who had no legal background whatsoever going to a big firm 23 years ago, who would have thunk that having an operations background today, you know, what would be as important as it is. I mean, we've hired folks who are musicians. We've hired folks who are opera singers. We've hired folks who were news producers who have gone on to be fantastic lawyers with terrific client service orientations. And again, on a preliminary level or at first blush, you would say, okay, well, what would make you think that somebody with that background would end up being the perfect candidate? It's just one of those things where you have to look at who the person is and all the dimensions as much as you can from the beginning. And I think having people with that diverse set of backgrounds and experiences, it helps you see things. And from a decision-making standpoint, I think it's critical. I think you reach the best decisions by having folks in the room and part of the process who give you those different frames of reference.
You know, what you bring up, I think, is really powerful, because there are a number of surveys that have been taken over the years, whether it's CEOs or owners of small businesses and small to mid-sized companies, who regard one of the toughest challenges they have would be to find qualified people to fill the open positions that they have. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a lot of unemployment, essentially, just because jobs aren't being filled, not necessarily because there are no jobs, you know, for people. What's interesting, though, is I think you brought up two factors that help you in this regard. One is you know where to look for them, right?
Right.
You go and look for and find lots of different kinds of people, number one. And then secondly, you're also willing to entertain skill sets and talents and, you know, contributions that people can make that are outside of that box that so many people, and because of that, it appears that you not only find the people, but consider and really get to know them in a way where you're like, wow, this person can really make a difference in this firm. And it's going to be really rewarding when not only you discover those people, but you bring them on and have them be mm-hmm. successful in that way. It's going to be pretty great stuff.
It really is. And it's also, I would say, it's spotting them, knowing it when you see it, successfully recruiting them, but it's also developing them. I think that that's a really critical part of the process. And it's an ongoing process. It's not something you do once a year when you review people. It has to be every day. And that's something that I was very fortunate to have worked with people early in my career. And even still today, I learn a tremendous amount from the lawyers who I happen to work with, both within and outside of my group. And it's also, again, about paying it forward and making sure that I am, for the more junior lawyers, what these folks were for me when I was a junior lawyer, and making sure that I'm not just helping them develop their substantive skills, but I'm helping them navigate their careers and understanding the politics and the relationships of a working environment, as well as the substance that is necessary to become a great lawyer.
Well, and you know, you mentioned to me specifically a woman emerging leaders program mm-hmm. that you have yes. at the firm that, I would imagine in some respects is doing for those women what your brothers did for you, and what other people have done for you over your career is give you the not only the confidence, but also the understanding and the resources and just the real guidance to be successful in that way. But I'd love to hear a little more about that program too.
Sure. So we have this program, as you mentioned, the Women Emerging Leaders Program, that we've had for several years now. And what it really focuses on is it's an application process where we end up having a number of women in this program for a year to 2 year period. They are partners at the firm, and it helps them develop skills to not only develop or more fully develop a book of business and client relationships, but it also helps them develop relationships with leaders at the firm, as well as peers at the firm, gives them coaching and guidance on several things, including leadership skills, as well as business development skills. They get the opportunity to meet with leadership several times during the year, usually at the same time as other leadership meetings are happening. So they're invited to these meetings, and they get to observe these meetings as they occur, and also to participate in the receptions and dinners that usually happen around these different board meetings. So it's been a really successful program. It helps create multiple dimensions to the relationships and the careers that these women already have at the firm. And the ones who have participated in it already have already said that it's made a meaningful difference for them and has really moved the needle in terms of helping them transition into more senior partnership.
Well, when I think that the combination of real resources, mm-hmm. but also the visibility, you know, too mm-hmm. often people feel invisible in their job, mm-hmm. but they figure the leadership of the firm, they don't even know who I am. And,
right.
and that's a tough thing, because you want to make an impression. You want to understand kind of what it's like to be at that level and play at that level. And you're not going to be able to do it unless you're surrounding yourself with people who are doing just that, and get to, you know, offer some of their guidance. But you get to see people model, hopefully, the kinds of behavior that you would hope to have as you advance in your career.
Absolutely. I completely concur. And, you know, it's something that I was able to do as I became a more senior partner through different experiences I had. This program didn't exist when I was coming up through the ranks, but I was able and very fortunate to be given opportunities, for example, to have leadership roles with respect to hiring, for example, for the firm, the Women's Initiative, diversity and inclusion, my practice group, and other roles as well. So being able to develop those relationships with more senior leaders and to watch them in action, I think, you know, that's the most invaluable part of it, is to watch other people's styles, particularly people who have skills that maybe you want to develop, or you may think, you know, you need, you know, further assistance on or honing, to be able to observe different people's styles and to learn the stories of how they got where they are is really just a real privilege and is really critical to one's development.
Well, it's certainly been wonderful to hear about some of the people that have influenced you, but also it's so clear how you're paying it forward now by playing such a key role in making sure that these emerging leaders in your firm have the opportunity to surround themselves with the right people so that they can be successful as well. So I just want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today. It was so wonderful to have you. I'm so now more grateful than ever to my cousin Kathleen for introducing us, and just really appreciate everything you're doing there, and just love learning about you and your firm.
Well, thank you very much. It was really wonderful to get a chance to chat with you today. And I'm likewise very grateful to Kathleen for connecting us. So thank you.
Well, we'll do it again sometime for sure. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobattari.com. That's leobottari.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell, hosted, of course, by Leo Battari. Music provided by Kevin McLeod, Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.